CliffCentral.com.
You're listening to The Bounce Show with Byron Karpinski. I'm Hugh Bladen, and it's on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, Blads, and it's Ben Karpinski.
Why didn't you tell me? Ben Karpinski on CliffCentral.com.
What can I do? Just put on my best pair of shoes, because Chief, he's the one that killed Tom. Honey, that's for long. I just want to know what's wrong with me.
Happy Monday, happy Bounce Show, happy sort of middle towards latter stages of January. Oh, what a great sporting weekend we had. I will get into that and more with all kinds of great videos and footballers trying to speak English and so much for you today. Welcome to it. It is the Bounce Show. But first, we have a special guest, and this is a very, very busy man. So while I struggle with my words, he is none other than Spoo Mujikaliso. Now, we've had Spoo on before. Back when we were talking rugby, but now, I mean, he's always been a bit of a big deal for me in sport, but now he's the editor of Kickoff magazine, and he's a man with not much time, so we're going to get straight into it, because I've been wanting to chat to this guy since last year, when he actually was appointed to a very high-profile job in SA Sports Media. Spoo, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm there, Ben.
Solid. Great. Great line as well. Thanks so much for joining me. I know you've got a really hectic schedule. I can only imagine when you get to the office on a Monday morning, you must have all kinds of meeting requests. Somebody wants this, somebody wants that. So first up, congrats. I haven't actually spoken to you since you've been appointed as editor of Kickoff magazine. This must be a huge step up for you.
Yeah, no, it's an incredibly huge job, and I think you might have talked me up a bit there in that intro. You put me under a whole lot more pressure.
Not a word of a lie.
but yeah, it's been great, man. It's definitely the highest profile gig I've been in. It's a management job, my first one. And to be an editor of a mainstream national publication at only 30 years old, I mean, it's quite incredible. I feel incredibly lucky, but yeah, it's an opportunity.
Are you only 30 years old? Now I feel even more insignificant to my life. Wow.
I know, I don't sleep. I know, my landlord once asked me if I'm not 39 years old, I know.
Jesus, so, okay.
Yeah.
So, look, there's so many things I want to get into this conversation with you. I know time isn't of the essence for this week, but you know, obviously you've had a great sort of standing in media and, you know, critical acclaim writer. You definitely know what's happening in a variety of sports. I'm pretty sure you took this because you're just tired of speaking about the Springboks, but that's my own speculation. So the real question I got to ask is the future of magazines and the challenges that are with that. You know, was this kind of the most daunting thing you thought of when you took on the job, as far as, you know, how relevant are magazines nowadays?
Yeah, I definitely took that as part of it. I mean, I also came in with a strategy which haven't implemented yet, that we had to present to the Media 24 last week. And my GM, my boss, had to present that to the board. So that shows that I had to come in with something that is like incredibly innovative to be able to convince them that, yes, we can keep the magazine going as well. I'm very, very tech aware, very tech savvy as well. To be digitally aware doesn't mean that you are suddenly going to throw print away out the window, and it also doesn't mean that, you know, you're gonna ignore the digital revolution. So it's about finding a proper merger, and I think that's what my role is. I mean, as much as I'm not involved directly with kickoff.com, I do oversee the Kickoff brand, and that's just one of the things that I have to take care of. And just on that point, I mean, with the fake news thing gaining wind, I think a lot of people are going to have to run back to the original news providers, original news agents, or have moved to tech who are from trusted brands, that's how people will know that what's real and what's not. I think that's the biggest that's facing us now. It's not print versus digital. It's now what's real and what's fake. I think print and digital are going to have to come together at some point to sort of fight back against the fake news, against fabrication of news, against manipulation of news, which has made things look more commercial or unreal, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a very good point you make there, because you know, always when it comes down to it, you've got to think of integrity. So if people are breaking stories, you can pick up all kinds of bits and pieces, but you know, it's about getting the real thing. I guess the biggest problem is, in my understanding, like when I grew up and I was reading Sports Illustrated or I was reading whatever it may be, I always thought like, this is, wow, these are real journalists. These guys are interviewing people, they're getting things I'll never be able to get. And I really looked up to them in that kind of sense. Obviously, as I grew up as an adult, and I've been nothing more than a blogger in my life, so my stuff is more opinionated because that's just the level that I run in. Some journalists will call me a bottom feeder, but you know, that's not for this conversation. So I guess the difficult thing is there enough money in sort of print media and that kind of stuff to actually really sustain proper investigative journalism, proper journalism where people are getting stories, rather than just sitting back in their office and going, well, I'm just going to write an opinion piece. It seems so much easier. It's going to get hits. It's going to get people to look at it. You know, I believe that this is becoming almost like the death of mainstream media, is that I'm really battling differentiation between journalists or proper writers and bloggers. I mean, the line is blurred so much. Is that something that kind of concerns you a bit as well, now in this position?
Look, I don't want to knock bloggers at all, because I feel like opinion drives everything that we do, especially in sport.
Sure.
And look, it accelerates involvement as well. I mean, a lot of people have found themselves to have skills that ordinarily that they never thought that they would have. Like, you get a guy like Clyde Rathbone. I mean, he's a brilliant writer. And if we were living in the 50s, he probably would write letters to the editor and that would be that. But he's a regular columnist in the Australian press, and he is actually very, very accomplished. He's got natural writing skills, even though he's untrained. So this tech world that we're living in allows for that, for people to express themselves. And I'm not necessarily worried about people having opinions, but I am worried about the investment that's been made to maintain print where it is. I mean, like, I tried to commission a guy I used to work with at Times Media, a guy called James Otway, who is a CNN award-winning photographer, to do some work for us. And I showed him our photography budget, and he basically laughed in my face and told me, good luck getting a photographer on that budget. So that kind of shows you that, okay, look, it's things are very, very, very tough. But because he's a mate, James has promised that in time, if I do manage to wangle a respectable budget, he's willing to work with us. But that's the kind of thing. I mean, you're a magazine, you want photographs.
Yeah.
You're a magazine, you want time, people to go out there in the fields, in the felt, at the back of Bucky's, watching the landscape, talking to people. That's what you want. I mean, I think eventually even the digital space is going to want that, because the stories are out there. I think if we cut the investment in getting people out there is when we're cutting the professional right in the middle, and we're hitting it right in the sternum.
Yeah, exactly. Then guys just going to be retweeting something from two seasons ago, trying to pass it off as now. So with regards to magazines and just how magazines do function, just getting back to that for a second. In the past, there would be great features and you can go to print and you'd be pretty confident that whatever's in that magazine will be relevant for quite some time. Obviously, now people with a short attention span, you know, if a story breaks, the story is almost dead about 10 minutes later because everyone's already talked about it, spoofed it, retweeted it, shared it through broken telephone. So as editor, like, what's your big focus as far as magazine to magazine, as far as making sure that all the content is relevant and actually really worth having?
Ignore all the tweets, ignore everything posted online, just ignore it all. Ignore the fuss, ignore the blizzard outside. What we want to do is we create the long conversation, the conversation you will have over dinner, the one that sparks a debate instead of being reactionary to what's happening by the snap of the finger. What's the latest tweet? What's the latest Instagram post? Or what's on your Facebook feed? We're really not about that. Like, we've got a full digital team that takes care of our digital needs. But on the magazine side, we're about finding the thing that isn't going to be on your Twitter timeline. That's right. That's what we're looking for. That's the ideal. Look, it's so difficult to get there because you need the skills in-house of people go there. You need the drive as well. I mean, one of my main things is I believe this, the guys that we have are one of the most talented teams that still exist in journalism. It's about trying to get them to a level where they find themselves reaching a level beyond what they can tweet or beyond what they can put together for kickoff.com and actually have that thirst to go out there. And even if it's one story a month, but if it's a nicely written piece where you're speaking to everybody involved, if you have to speak to somebody's mother to get the story done, you go do it. If you have to feed their dog, you just go do it. You just do everything to get it done. And those are the kind of interviews, profiles, features that we want. And slowly but surely it's getting there. I'll tell you, we're probably not 50% to the ideal that I'd prefer, but the improvement has been more than 200% from what it was before I came. Look, there was great work done by Mark Leeson and Nick Said, who took over in the interim. But if I dare anybody to compare the kickoff February edition of 2016 to the February edition we have now of 2017, and it's chalk and cheese.
I think there's something that really nice in that last answer is the long conversation. Everyone now, and I mean, I speak on, I think, behalf of the whole fan standpoint, because I like getting insights from just your everyday guy and how he goes about watching sport. But I think it's so lacking, this long conversation. People have these knee-jerk reactions to stories. So they're either with AB, he's a god, or he is an absolute money-grabbing whore. On the other hand, to use cricket as an example. But no one's tapping into the long conversations here, as you say. And this is why I believe, in my ideal world, magazines will always have a part to play. So your magazines are your reference points to start. It's your well-thought-out articles. It's your big, bigger pictures. Social media is like that. It's like the garnish almost. It's the stuff that kind of, you know, you throw on the side. It presents everything and keeps it current. And it's all
good. Yeah, you can't survive on garnish.
It's like when you go to a bar, you can't survive on tequilas. You all fall over. You've got to have the long drink. You've got to go with the beer and pace yourself from there. So yeah. I think, you know, people aren't having these conversations. They're, you know, many of my sort of peers, it's like, well, magazines, what's the point? I can get all the stories online. It's not technically correct, though, as long as you say, you've still got guys who are creating these long conversations.
I don't want to live in a world where there are no magazines. I mean, magazines, as soon as you grab a magazine in your hand, you feel like you've got something there, you know, you've got something weighty in your hand. And that's how they've always felt for me. And I'm just like you. I used to idolize magazine writers from SA Sports Illustrated before it shut down.
Yeah.
I read a lot of the US Sports Illustrated. These days I read ESPN, Go.com. I read Sports Illustrated Vault. I mean, I like savor it all, and it's great for me. And I read any magazine. I'll read Joburg magazine. I'll grab anything that, and of course, SA Rugby, because, you know, I'm a long suffering rugby fan.
Aren't we all? Well, Samir, I know we haven't got much time left. So just to kind of close off here. In your capacity now as editor of Kickoff Magazine, you know, your outlook on SA football, I mean, do you feel it's kind of changed because of your responsibility of covering things? Is this something you look forward to kind of getting? Or is it, again, one of those things you're quite apprehensive seeing as, you know, take away Sundowns? It's not a whole bunch that we can really be massively excited about.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's nothing we can do as journalists and media people about how the team performs or the state of South African football, but we can reflect it. Our job merely is to be a reflection of the times. We can't lie about things that don't exist. Also, I don't believe things are as dire as we imagine. Look, we're still unbeaten in a World Cup qualification campaign. We've got great youngsters. that are coming up. We've profiled three of them, Gordinho at Chiefs, Mahlambi at Vets, as well as Percy Tau, who's done brilliantly for Sundowns. So there is something there. We can do nothing about how the administrators handle South African football.
Which is the big worry, really.
You know, that's a huge worry. But we have a responsibility to reflect the times, to say when it's going wrong, to comment, to give our opinion. Whether they take it or not, that's like up to them. I mean, conjecture is always going to be there, but it's very important to have the conversation, Ben, to just keep talking about the things that bug us, and just get the right people involved. Just appoint the right coach for once. Back him. Don't set ridiculous mandates. Just back him. Give him a 5-year unconditional sort of contract, and just put a few clauses there to drive youth to get us to tournaments, and so that we can improve. And I think the same should be done at clubs as well when they appoint coaches.
I totally agree. Final question: AFCON. We just saw FIFA in a giant PR exercise, I believe, of making it our 48-team tournament in 2026, whatever. Do you think there's ever any scope for AFCON to expand, or is 16 pretty much the tangible limit here, realistic limit?
Look, I'll be distraught if they increase the number of teams playing at AFCON, purely because there's not enough quality to even sustain the 16 teams that are there already. The best teams have certainly risen to the top. Senegal, Ghana, sure, Ivory Coast have sort of started a bit, but you can already tell Egypt has also come out strongly. Morocco has bounced back. So it's almost the same guys that are being touted as the best are the ones that are producing the quality football and not much else. Extending that tournament, I mean, what are we looking at? We're looking at probably getting a lot more weaker teams that didn't qualify. Look, as much as people will say Nigeria and Bafana didn't qualify for the first time, since both of them gained sort of entry into the international sphere, but they were weak teams at that point, and I don't think they deserved to qualify, so they would have weakened the tournament in any case. So I really wouldn't want a weakened AFCON. A lot of people are worried about FIFA's World Cup, what it's going to be like with a 48 team. I was just worried whether there'll be more African slots. I feel like 7 African teams would result in more semi-final entries.
Yeah, well, again, it hasn't been confirmed if those other nations other continents do get more. Obviously, Europe's going to get more anyway, so it's going to be difficult to see how it goes.
I think the whole thing was engineered for more European teams.
Yeah, exactly. So, final plug, where can we find more of you? And, of course, it goes without saying, Kickoff Magazines are all good publicists or stores. What do they call them? News agents.
Yeah, news agents. I mean, the latest Kickoff will be like at your regular CNA or something.
Yep.
I'm on Twitter. I'm Spoo_fundraiser. I'm on Instagram, Spoo_fundraiser, or at Dapper_editor.
Super.
That's on Instagram. Yeah.
Right, so I agree with you. I don't want to live in a world without magazines, and I think there's definitely a place for it still. And I wish you all the best in getting where you want to go, because I know as a young, ambitious, and talented lad that you are, you definitely will get there and then some.
Thanks very much, Ben.
Cool, man. Have a great day. Right, that was Spoo Mjikaliso. He's, as I said, he was one of my favorite ever sort of rugby correspondents on the show. If you haven't listened to this band show for quite a while, I thank you first and foremost. But secondly, he was a guy who was spot on with the rugby, and he's just decided to put it all into football. So, again, like a conversation is a conversation I wanted to have for quite a while. I think I finally found a dude. Is that magazines aren't actually dead. And I know everybody wants to go, oh, with the smartphone, I've got everything that I possibly need. But you can still get so much from magazines. And it's a really cool reference. And I just think you look at comments and you look at how people go about talking about sport nowadays. Is that they lack the bigger picture with so much. So as great as Twitter is, all kinds of social media, as great as certain blogs are, it's an element. I think we need to balance our intake. And I'm the first to admit it. I am a blogger. I'm a person who doesn't do interviews with people because I ordinarily get quite bored. I poke fun at things because I'm all about laughing at stuff rather than taking things too seriously. So, I mean, I wouldn't suggest you just listen to what I got to say. Like, guys like Sabu, he's a great example. And then some more magazines. Anyway, so what I wanted to do is get into the show now proper. I've thrown a bit out of kilter here by Sabu's schedule, unfortunately. So going forward, this is how we're going to do the show. And I've been umming and ahhing the last couple of weeks about this new format and if I should be changing things. If not, I've had some interesting sort of insights and feedback from listeners over email, which I really appreciate. You can email me anytime, ben@thebalance.co.za. So how it's going to be going forward is we're going to do half an hour recap of the weekend, all the big stories. I'll try to find some great clips for you, just so you start the week on an informed footing. If you are listening live, which is 10 a.m. every Monday on cliffcentral.com. And then the second half hour will be interviews with guys like Sabu, just people of worth in sport, really, who have things to say and have insights to share. So basically what we can do now is, for extended time, get into the weekend wrap-up and all the big stories. But let's show that this show is a real professional show by playing this.
Is this thing on? You're listening to The Bounce Show. It's live. Well, not this bit, but it's live on clivecentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, lads.
Sorry, scrap that, delete it. Cliffcentral.com.
Yes, indeed, that's the Bounce Show. Right, so the big story from the weekend, well, there was just so, so many. But I think we've got to start in Australia.
It's wide. Misha Zverev completes a quite outstanding victory. 7-5, 5-7, 6-2, 6-4. 3 hours and 34 minutes. The upsets just keep on rolling at this year's Australian Open. It is reminiscent of Australian Opens gone by.
Misha Zverev, you probably haven't heard of him, much like Dennis Osterman, who beats Novak Djokovic last week. So Andy's gone, Novak's gone. Oh, it's all looking so great for Federer's side of the draw now. Roger Federer beat Ken Nishikori, so he will play that Zverev guy in the quarters. But yeah, we'll get into the draw in a little bit now. But let's just get some thoughts from Andy, a somber Andy afterwards.
Do you feel flat, low on energy? It's all everyone says you were shouting energy at a changeover.
Yeah, I think it's. I don't think I was flat as always. I feel like that's something I get asked all the time when I lose matches. It's always like, were you flat? I don't think I was today. I was getting myself pumped up some of the times at the end of the set, so we're trying to, you know, get a little bit more energy. You know, show more sort of positive body language and. Yeah, and I did that at the end of the match, in the end of the first and second sets. It just wasn't to be today.
I absolutely love watching Andy Murray press conference. It's like his guilty pleasure that I have. He sits there with the eyes of the world on him, and he's just like, speaking about energy, it's just so funny because he's the epitome of low energy. Donald Trump would not fancy this guy. But he's gone, huh? And it must be like finally coming back to earth for him, because world number one, he was doing so well, and to be knocked out in the tournament that he's been five times runner-up in this event, right? So this was his big chance. Djokovic just lost. He's been five times runner-up. He knows what to do to get to the top, only to then be beaten by Djokovic. So the huge moment. But good on these lesser-ranked guys. I mean, this Zverev, that Usterman guy I mentioned, both press conferences, Andy Murray was basically saying that, you know, he was good. He was just good. I mean, obviously, Murray wasn't at his absolute best, but it's such a competitive sport is tennis. These other guys are coming through, and they really are working the hard side to get to the situation where they can be real top ranked. So no matter what Andy did, this guy had a counter for it. That Istanbul guy, when he beat Djokovic, he just simply kept coming at him, and Istanbul said himself, I was amazed by how I played. It's like everything just sort of worked in the day, and every shot I tried, it actually worked. So it's going to make for a great tournament going forward now. If we are to look at the draw, now Andy was on the top side, of course, being seed number one, and then Novak Djokovic would have been on the bottom side, so that they meet kind of in the middle there. That's how it works. I'm sure this isn't new to you. So if you look at the top side of the draw now, and Roger Federer, who did take some time off because obviously he needs to be managing his career, but as far as the fact that he's old, I mean, I think he's my age, like 35. So he'll take on Zverev in the quarters, and then the winner of that between Wawrinka and Tsonga will take on that. So that's your top side of the draw. And then the bottom side of the draw, big thing today is we've got Gael Monfils will take on Nadal. Bautista Ugarte will take on Raonic. And then Dominic Thiem, he went down to David Goffin. Okay, so Goffin's already in the quarters. He'll play the winner of Dimitrov versus Istomin. That's, well, you got to think Dimitrov. Dimitrov's going to be one of the favorites, I think, to come through. Bit of a dark horse, but that guy, bottom side of the draw, he might have that irresistible semi-final against Milos Raonic. That could be something. Something indeed. In the women's side of the draw, well, Kerber's gone. She's the top seed. She got absolutely hammered by Coco Vandeweghe. That's probably the greatest name in sport right now. So she's out. So, look, ultimately, everyone's just hoping that Serena comes through and wins the Grand Slam, which takes it past Steffi Graf. So it's not really much more to that story. I'm sure there's more to it. And if you're a women's tennis fan, I really do apologize for cutting it short. But, yeah, got to move on. It was a fantastic weekend of football. It really was. Now, of course, we chatted briefly with Spoo about the AFCON. Now, the AFCON is getting interesting now. Of course, Group A has been decided. So Gabon, who are the host, all they had to do was try and beat Cameroon, get a goal in somewhere. And they had so many opportunities, and they really fluffed it. Final move of the game, there was a shot on goal, which is well saved. Then the goalkeeper was literally on his ass. All that guy had to do was kick it anywhere where the guy wasn't. And he managed to save it while sitting on his ass. You got to think that's horrible. And what makes it even worse is that this is the first host country since 1994 to not be able to qualify for the playoffs. So that's Group A. Burkina Faso, they came good. They beat Guinea-Bissau 2-0. And now on the back of the 2-0 scoreline, they managed to get a better goal average than Cameroon. So they go through, top of Group A. Group B, well, that's going to be Senegal, really. It's Senegal's pool to win this one. They are currently on top of that one with 6 points. Now, today, Monday 23rd, they'll play. They'll play Algeria, and then Tunisia will take on Zimbabwe. So Tunisia is on 3 points. They're looking pretty good here. If they can beat Zimbabwe, obviously go to 6. And then Algeria down at one point. Now, these guys were kind of, if you look at rankings by FIFA, they're kind of the favorites to kind of take this one. But they're languishing down in third there. They've played 2, drawn 1, lost 1. So that's going to be Group B decided. And then on the other ones, DR Congo, Morocco, and Ivory Coast. They are fighting out for Group C. Togo just sort of languishing behind there. And then Group D, Ghana and Egypt. Well, they're pretty much going to go through. They're just so much better than the rest. So that's going to be your Group D. AFCON will go on. And one day we can sit here and talk about Bafana being in it. What a day that would be, huh? But the big football story from the weekend, it just has to be everything in the English Premier League. So just look at the results quickly. Now, Liverpool, great opportunity to sort of make some ground up on Chelsea. And what do? They absolutely... Swansea have had probably one of the worst seasons. You know, when you look at a team early season, you go, yeah, these guys are getting the chop. That's been Swansea, right? And Liverpool lost 3-2 to them at home over the weekend, which is just so, so miserable. And the big question has to be asked, is Klopp ever going to really take on some new defenders? He really needs to buy some defenders. I know that the strategy sometimes is, well, you know, we'll leak a few goals, but we'll always back ourselves to score more. Well, when you're leaking 3 against Swansea, even if you were to win this game 5-3, you don't leak 3 to a team as poor as Swansea. Liverpool on the day only scored 2. So as you know with maths, 3 is better than 2. And now they lost that. Not only did they lose that game, but now they lost second position. Arsenal are now second. And they are a full 8 points behind Chelsea. So to think Chelsea aren't going to win it from here is just, well, it's just foolish, really. Chelsea did play in the last match of the weekend. They beat Hull 2-0. Stoke drew 1-1 with Man United. Man City drew 2-2 with Spurs. Southampton beat Leicester 3-0. Shame, Leicester are being so screwed over this year. I mean, they lost some players, obviously, because that happens. But they've lost players currently to AFCON as well. And then Arsenal 2-1 winners over Burnley. So just to get into that, let's get first into the Man United game, okay? So we know Man United are a team that's kind of, they're doing better. They're getting back to where they should be. They're getting some momentum. They're not losing any games. They've had a nice unbeaten run. And one of the side shows from there has been Wayne Rooney. Not because he's actually getting some first team play, it's just that he's finally got to the stage where he is the all-time goal scorer for Manchester United, which is a huge feat in itself when you consider the greats that have played for that team. So over the weekend, Wayne Rooney did this.
Rooney, a goal! Goal Manchester United, Wayne Rooney, goal getter of all-time Man United. Bobby Charlton este depășit, un gol marcat sub privirile lui Bobby Charlton. Iată-l în tribună.
So I've got to play that again. Goal getter Man United. That's absolute gold. Here it is again.
Nu apar breșele pe jocul colectiv. Rooney, e gol! Goal Manchester United, Wayne Rooney.
Goal getter all time, Wayne Rooney. So yeah, he beat Sir Bobby Charlton. And after the match, Wayne had some thoughts about this. Not the most eloquent guy, but you know, you got to give this guy credit where credit is due. He got in there at a pretty early age. I think Everton, Man United bought him from Everton, I think, back when he was 16 years old. And here he is, Man United's biggest or greatest goal scorer. Most fantabulous goal getter.
All-time English leading goalscorer, now the all-time Manchester United leading goalscorer. Describe to us, if you can, what that means to you.
Yeah, it's a great feeling, obviously. It's a bit of a strange one at the minute, having dropped 2 points. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a huge proud moment for myself and something that will live me, I'm sure, for the rest of my life.
What does it mean to go past a legend like Sir Bobby Charlton?
Yeah, again, it's such an iconic figure at Manchester United and has been for many years. Someone, when you sign for the club, you realise the importance he is, how important he is to this football club, and to surpass him today in goals is, you know, it's something I never even thought of. And So, I'm delighted, and I have the utmost respect for Sir Bobby, and I'm sure, well, I know he come and dressed him after the game and congratulated me, so I know he's pleased in some way anyway, but no, it's a great honour for me.
Well, good on Wayne Rooney. That is a huge feat, and I forgot he's England's all-time goal scorer as well. So he's passed some pretty big names, and even though he is very much past his prime, and he hasn't been the most marketable of people when you think about it. Maybe he doesn't get the sort of applause that he really does deserve. But a game that I thought was very, very entertaining of the weekend was the Arsenal match. So Arsenal were 1-0 up against Burnley. This isn't a team that should be troubling a team like Arsenal right now. But Arsenal, like every other team that I support, they always make things unnecessarily interesting. So they were 1-0 up, and then 68 minutes in, that Zenit Gakpo guy, Granit Xhaka, he got sent off for a pretty rash challenge. And look, depends which way you look at it. If you're a Burnley supporter, it's a straight red. If you're an Arsenal supporter, you think, well, you barely touched him. But decision stands, and it was a moment of madness that kind of then put a lot of pressure on to Arsenal. They then conceded a penalty. They went in injury time, so it was 1-1, and then deep in injury time, Alexis Sanchez managed to convert a penalty for Arsenal, 2-1. But while that first penalty happened, Arsene Wenger was losing his shit. It was quite something, because I still believe this guy is like a tall version of Mr. Bean. And there was pushing and shoving involved, and eventually Arsene got sent off, basically. So here are his thoughts after that match.
Arsene, how do you reflect on what happened in injury time, let alone the rest of the match?
Two penalties, and at the end of the day, we had 7 minutes injury time. We played with 10 men. I think it was difficult, but just before the penalty, we should have scored the second goal, and after that, it was a bit tactic.
Yes, it was. What happened, or what was your view of the penalty they got?
My view is that, honestly, I didn't see that it was a penalty, and I'll have to watch that on video if to see what happened there. Coughlin told me he ran into him, but he didn't make a penalty, but I don't know.
Okay, what happened with yourself? Because, in fact, you don't actually have to do this interview. You were sent off yourself.
Mm-hmm. Myself, I just should have shut up, and I apologize for not having done it. That's it. But basically, it was nothing malicious, or I just was shoot on, said the word, and that should have kept my control, even if it was in a hectic time.
Of course, it's difficult, but what did you say? What happened? The first we saw you were halfway down the tunnel. It looked, in fact, to get physical with the fourth official.
No.
No?
No. I just went in after I watched it here after.
Okay.
I thought I could stay in the corridor.
I understand.
This is like interviewing, it's like asking your grandfather why he got into a fight at a pub, and it's just so bad. No, it's nothing like that. So, of course, if you ever want anything from Arsenal, you've got to go to Arsenal Fan TV. So you've got to go to the source. This is the real horse's mouth, not Arsene saying he wasn't a naughty boy.
Arsenal Fan TV, you know, I've got a slight apology to you because I was slating you before the game because you were saying, yeah,
well, you always fucking slate me.
It's Claude, of course. He's still with us, barely.
Or something like that. It was a lot tighter than I thought it was going to be. I thought that we'd get a few goals. And we were cruising up until Granit Xhaka with that, you know, moment of madness.
I can't believe he done it. I still can't believe he done it. He put us under a lot of pressure there because that's the second time he's done a stupid tackle like that. And that's, you know, that's four matches now he's out for, isn't it? No, another midfield player out.
Mm. But on the flip side,
we could do with Jack back, couldn't we? Really, now, can't we? Fucking break.
On the flip side, a win, and we really needed that win. We really needed that 3 points, and Alexis Sanchez again, the man.
Well, the man that's better than sex, yeah. No, but the way he took that penalty is so cool. The way he just
if he'd have missed that.
So I'm worried about Claude because he looks like he's losing his edge, and now he thinks Alexis Sanchez is better than sex. He's going off on some deviant tangents as this old git.
And I was thinking to myself, well, no, this is because my blood pressure's 200 over 100 at the moment, and I think it went to 250 on that. But it's amazing, you know. But still, Robbie, there's still a lot of. I know it's a great result in the end, but there's still a lot of deficiencies there. Still a lot of work to be done. The defence, all over the place. Even the first half, they were getting behind us. Still not right at the back. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Our midfield is not closing down properly in the middle of the park. I don't think we've got maybe the right combination in the middle.
Mm. Yeah, look, I totally echo whatever Claude's got to say here. I think it's nice that Arsenal can then go on to second place because what that does is that it creates such mayhem for the real optimists who believe this is it. This is the chance. We're going to mount it from here. But bollocks, 8 points behind Chelsea. I don't see it happening. Costa's looking so good up front for them. Conte seems to have got such a nice mix. He knows exactly what he's doing with his team. They've lost three games this year. They've drawn one. 18 wins. Now, that's four more than Arsenal. It's five more than basically anyone else of the chasing pack from there. So just look at this before we wrap it up for the football bit of this. Chelsea played 22, 55 points. Basically, there's a stat that's gone now. It's every team has played 21 and have had 52 points or more. Have never lost the league from here. If that's a kiss of death, I don't know what it is, but I can't see them being overhauled here. Arsenal back on 47 points, Spurs behind them. All the teams have played 22 points at this stage. So Arsenal 47, Spurs 46, Liverpool 45, Man City 43, and Man United 41. And as we've seen in the last few weeks, Pep Guardiola is basically saying, well, look, we're trying, but I mean, it's just not working. It's just not working. He's almost resigned himself to the fact that, let's call a spade, this team is being, they're quite cuck right now, but perhaps next year I can get something more out of it. Whether or not he's going to have the patience to kind of stick with Man City while they go into this, it's going to be very interesting to see. Because everybody thought that this year was going to be so amazing having Mourinho, Guardiola, the rivalry, those guys getting all heated, but when they're sitting at fifth and sixth on the championship, on the league table, yeah, it's not really a big deal, is it? So that was the football covered. Interesting weekend. And the PSL for local football fans comes back first, I think, first, second weekend of February. So If you are missing and craving some of the local stuff, well, if you are sad about it, then there's always Andy Murray to turn to.
You might think I'm a miserable Scot, but let me assure you, I'm definitely not. It's not my fault if I seem so glum. It's in my genes, just look at my mom. Yes, I'm passing along. If you feel like Santa Claus without a roof, sing along.
Don't be fooled, don't be fooled. Andy is happy. He's a happy guy. Right, so another big weekend of cricket. So there's a lot going on at the moment. England returned to India. You know that they got absolutely dicked in that test series. Well, they went back for the ODIs and, well, kind of business as usual from there. They got really, really hammered. They went into this third ODI at Kolkata Gardens. They're already 2-0 down in the series. They just didn't have the bowlers to ever defend any sort of total. Virat Kohli was just running wild like everyone else. And, yeah, that was it. That was the series. So I went into this third one, which was a dead rubber. And England, well, they managed to get Kohli out for less than 60. This has just never really happened. So you all know England, okay? Bits and pieces one day aside, they can all chip in together. Great. This is another fine example. They scored 321 for 8. And then India's top order, well, Rahane, Rahul, whoever they try at the top there, it's just not working. Thankfully for them, Yuvraj Singh has kind of come back out of nowhere, so he's been pretty good. He scored 150 in the second test, sorry, the second ODI. He got 45 yesterday. Dhoni, this is his swan song, really. He's going to be gone pretty soon. But then Kohli was out for 55. Yadav, this other new great talent. They've got some pretty amazing middle-order batsmen to India. So Yadav got together along with Pandya, and they got so close. They only lost by 5 runs in the end, so that was a pretty good series. Another series taking place right now is Pakistan versus Australia, and you just get the impression that Pakistan are over it now. They went there for the test series, got hammered, got absolutely, absolutely hammered. And, well, in the ODIs, they're not exactly doing any better. Fourth ODI, it was 2-1 to the Aussies going into this one, and Australia won by 86 runs. They put 353 on the board, with Warner getting 130, pretty cash left, 119 balls. And then after that, well, Sajil Khan, he had a decent bat, but outside of that, there was nothing. So the big focus for us in South Africa this weekend was the T20 series against Sri Lanka. Again, same old story. The away team comes for a test series, gets absolutely knocked into bits and pieces, and then they play the ODI stuff, and these guys are just literally, they're a shaking shell. So we saw that the first game was taking place in Centurion, unfortunately with some seasonal rain there. So the game got curtailed to all of 10 overs. And then in a complete turnaround, absolutely shock kind of happening, they prepared a slow and turning kind of pitch for the Wanderers. Now, we all know that the Wanderers is a hard and fast pitch. That's kind of what we all get in for. You know, people spend decent money to go watch these T20 internationals. They're expecting big runs. That Wanderers pitch generally has an average score of around 170, 375 around there. Proteas got bugger all. And went on to lose a match that, well, they had no business losing. But it's good to see the Sri Lankans did manage to hold on. It was one of the funniest T20s I've seen in quite some time. Firstly, the Proteas were crap. There's no doubt about it. The pitch, I know, wasn't great, but the guys didn't adapt. And here are the thoughts of Captain Fohan Behardeen before I elaborate a bit more from my take of this.
Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing coming to the boarding and getting a slow turner. You know, normally when you come here to the Bullring, you expect pace and bounce and lots of runs and fours and sixes. Not so today. I think we didn't assess quickly enough. We thought we did, but, you know, the nature of the wicket brought the Sri Lankan spinners into the game. Noticeably, the left-arm Chinaman, who was the star for them today, picked up wickets.
You remember I said at the end of the year, can we please do away with this derogatory term, left-arm Chinaman? He's a leg-spin bowler with a left arm. Left-arm people are people too, okay? Damn it. And now I see Fohan Behardeen was doing so well as captain until he made that slur.
On a regular basis. And it just stunted our momentum going forward. We lost wickets at crucial moments and we couldn't get any momentum, any partnerships, which is crucial, especially on a low slow. It's difficult for the new batter to come in. Yeah, look, it was something that we haven't faced before. It's his T20 international debut. The guys struggled. I mean, it was evident to see. You know, we will go back and have some analysis, and you know, we'll come up with some game plans in Cape Town. Hopefully, the wicket won't be as low or slow. So, you know, they might change their team based on the wicket. Might be some pace and bounce in Cape Town. Always seems to be a little bit of bounce. So, yeah, we'll plan accordingly. Come tomorrow and Tuesday if they do pick him again. Yeah, I said it as I walked off the field. The last game, you know, I think a superstar is born.
Okay, we'll get into that a bit because, of course, we all know what he's talking about. But if you are a betting man, you can bet pretty much anything that this third T20 is going to be all the Proteas. It's going to be hard and as bouncy as possible. It's going to be the exact opposite of whatever that thing was yesterday at the Wanderers, which nobody knew what was happening with. Plus, the third T20, SA are bringing back all their sort of big guns. So guys like John Smuts, De Bruyn, a couple other guys who've been kind of given a chance. I don't think they're going to be seeing Newlands action. But yeah, onto the star of the weekend, as brought up here by Farhan Bayandin.
He seems to thrive in the limelight. I don't want to put too much pressure on him. He's only 20 years old. But yeah, you know, if he keeps his head on the ground, he'll have a long career. He bowled out of his skin. He bowled with good pace and good bounce, even on a slowish wicket. And he got the breakthroughs for us that we needed. You know, he got 3 wickets in his first 3 overs, and he got a breakthrough in his 4th over, you know. So he was somebody that we, you know, we turned to look to strike, and I'm really pleased for him. I think if he's managed properly, you know, he's like I've mentioned, he's only 20 years old, you know. A lot has come thick.
Sorry, we are of course talking about Lungi and Giddy here, just in case you missed that.
He can fast. He's been the standout bowler in 2 T20 Challenge finals, you know, at SuperSport Park. He's been standout bowler in his first 2 T20 internationals. You know, if managed properly and looked after, there's every chance he'll play every form of South Africa.
Damn right. And you know, we saw it with KG Rabada as well. He came onto the scene after doing very well in the age group levels. And we thought, how the hell is this guy going straight from being, he's getting his debut, to now he's kind of bowling very, very well, to kind of like everyone's relying on him. And that's exactly what's kind of happening here. Yesterday, the Proteas lineup looked completely crap. It looked terrible with no penetration whatsoever. The Sri Lankans were just picking off the runs here and there. The moment that Ngidi got the ball, it was like a different game. It was a different pitch. It was a different atmosphere. The batsmen were just so kind of tentative. They didn't know what they were doing. This kid is a real talent. And I do say kid, not in a derogatory sense, because he's so young. But he isn't 20. He's all of 20 years old. And the composure and the presence that this guy has got at the crease, like, he's a big, strong dude. He really is. He's got a real great structure to him. You've got to think, as a fast bowler, the management with him is going to be very much of a physical sense, because if this guy can just always kind of be in the sweet spot as far as just fitness is concerned, let's not worry about form here. If this guy can stay fit and firing, and when you think you've got the likes of the players that we've got right now, and of course he is another example of amazing talent that's coming through here. I mean, this team is going to have something very, very special in 3-4 years' time. When you think how much experience that Rabada is going to have at that stage, you think of the experience that Ngidi is going to have at that stage. If I was other teams, I would. Yeah, you got to be very, very fearful of what the South African cricket team is going to have over all different formats. So that was, it was disappointing as a match is concerned. It really was. But it was also good just to kind of see Angelo Matthews on the right side of a press conference for once. He's had a tough time here. He really has. And this is after hitting the winning runs basically on one leg.
You hold your nerve superbly. I mean, it must have been tough there with all the wickets going around.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I had to bat till the end because we kept losing wickets, and, you know, somebody had to, a batsman or two had to stay at the other end, you know, while the others went after the bowling. Fortunately for me, I had to, you know, I stayed there till the end, but, you know, Sandakan deserves this, you know, more than me.
You and Chandamal played superbly. Little partnership was so vital. The experience came through at the right time.
Yeah, it was just run a ball at the time that we went onto the crease, and we just knew that, you know, we just couldn't lose, you know, any more wickets. We don't have, you know, much, you know, experience in our batting lineup, so we had to bat through. So we just, you know, talked about it. We said, you know, we'll just, you know, milk it through and try and bat till the end.
And you must have enjoyed finishing with a flourish in that last over, 2 sixes.
Yeah, I had to go because I couldn't run. So I had to go, and, you know, Kule said, you know, well, Kule can hit a long ball as well, so is Isuru. So, yeah, fortunately, I got the strike, and, you know, I was able to do it.
Well played yourself. Brilliant performance. Well done on the team winning the first game in on this tour. And all the best with the injury. I hope it takes shorter than you expect.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, no, Angelo's pretty scrapped. He's pretty screwed, actually. So you're not going to see him, I don't think, in that third T20. But just getting back to the point of this game being so interesting is that you obviously expect big runs. But T20 crickets, this is another thing that's just showing the maturity of this game, is that the low scorer can still be actually very interesting. Now, obviously, the mitigating factors here are the fact that the Proteas batted terribly. The Sri Lankan team is not a good side whatsoever. So there are a lot of things that leveled everything out here. But it was a great game. But just getting on to the Sengidi again, watching him play yesterday, if you haven't seen the highlights of this match, not to worry. When the blog post of this show goes up around midday Monday today, if you're listening live, then I'll put the highlights on there and just watch this guy bowl. Watch how good he is through the crease and just watch how these batsmen were just kind of cucking themselves. Bear in mind, he started bowling and all the Sri Lankans needed was 114.
Sengidi. A little bit short, and he's picked up a wicket. He struck. The 20-year-old has struck. Man of the match he was in his first game for South Africa. He's picked up an early wicket here. That's what they need, and Ngidi is on the board again.
That was quick. Cramped him up to space. Dhananjay De Silva had nowhere to go.
So he's about early 140s pace-wise, but you can definitely see he's got more there.
It back. That was not a good shot. On target from Ngidi. He's got a couple in, three balls. A really good start from the young speedster.
All while Wayne Parnell wasn't really doing the same.
Nicked it. He's got another one. Ngidi's got himself his third. That is outstanding stuff from this young speedster. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's great to see it. Great prospect, and it makes you feel so happy that there's great talent coming through in this country. Right, final thing for the weekend was the golf. There was the Abu Dhabi Championship, which unfortunately did not have Rory McIlroy because of that stress fracture that he sustained while he was in South Africa, really playing the SA Open. As I spoke about last week, it was such an incredible event that, and obviously Rory being here really made it. So there was just tens of thousands of people watching golf over the weekend, which was an amazing sight. It really is such a great live spectacle. And to be that close to one of sport's true superstars, I'm not saying in a golfing sense, but one of sport's true superstars, it was really great. So he was missing, but Dustin Johnson was there. Ricky Fowler was there defending his champion, Martin defending his title, Martin Keimer, Henrik Stenson, a lot of the big names. But it was Tommy Fleetwood who actually won it there. He beating a very, very soft set of field. There's a good guy to look out for in the future as well. He's a good game. He's pretty hardy, fearless a lot of the time. So he won that one. And then on the American tour, there was the 8th ever 59 shots over the weekend, and that was a Canadian guy actually, and his name was Adam Hadwood. So we saw Justin Thomas hitting a 59 in Hawaii a couple of weeks ago en route to the new scoring record for the PGA Tour at the Sony Open. So Adam Hadwood scored a 59 on the Saturday, and he was actually then just pipped at the post by Hudson Swafford. He is the Career Builder Challenge winner. Hudson Swafford beating Hadwood by 1 point. Sorry, one shot. What the hell am I talking about? One shot. Which kind of wraps up for this week. There's all your sort of big happenings. There's still lots of cricket to come. Wednesday this week will be the decider between SA and Sri Lanka. Is it going to have Eddie de Villiers in? Well, he had a very brisk 100 in his first game back in an amateur match up here in Gauteng. So if he's going to be fast-tracked into the team, very interesting to see because he is going to captain the ODI side. So, you know, if he's going to be doing that, you would see he would definitely be playing this T20 match coming up on Wednesday. And if he does, well, what a cool sight it's going to be. What kind of reception he'll get from the crowd with all these test match ummings and ahhings and people having their opinions. It'd be very interesting to see what kind of reception he gets. But I think as Eddie de Villiers, he should get nothing less than the reception that he needs. He's a true superstar. And I'll leave you with that thought as I play out with the Orchid Reporter from the European Tour. The European Tour does such amazing stuff to cover their great product that is a truly global golf tour. And now they've got a new guy, looks at things, just being very awkward.
All right, Tom, let's have some fun with this one.
On it.
Okay, we got Rick.
Okay, so he's got Nicholas Coltsarts and Chris Wood in a control booth telling this guy to go and say really awkward things to the golfers as they go into the first tee.
Keith Haler coming up. Give us the longest sound check in history.
Yeah, sure. 1-2.
Check 1-2. Sorry, Ricky. Yeah, check 1-2. 1-2.
Yeah, keep going.
Keep going.
Surround sound. Sorry about this. Surround sound.
And again, and again.
Ketchup. Sorry, just to, with minors, but can you just say ketchup 3 times? They've got sound problems at the back.
Ketchup. Ketchup.
Ketchup.
Ketchup.
Thanks very much, Ricky. Cheers.
Enric Stenson's up. Ask him the same questions as many times as possible.
It was a good year for you last year. Are you feeling good going into this one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming off the best season of my career, so very pleased with the way 2016 went.
Amazing.
And I hope I can carry on this year.
And I mean, what a year it was for you last year. I mean, are you hoping for more of the same 2017?
That'd be nice.
Do it again.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we're going to go live now. Same questions. Good year for you last year. You feeling good going into this one?
Yeah, absolutely. I played some really good golf and won some great tournaments. So I'd hope I can do the same.
Brilliant. And you had a great year in 2016, 17. Hoping for the same thing.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Brilliant. Okay. Can we just get one more take of that? Sorry, it's just we're doing it for the thing. Good year for you last year. Feeling good going into this one?
Yeah. I mean, what, are you rushing on purpose or?
Okay, like everything else that you heard, I will put all the videos up on thebounce.co.za. So whatever you've missed, whatever you didn't get, you can get everything on thebounce.co.za. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll catch you back next week. More interviews, more news, more everything in sport that you really, really like. Thanks for listening. Catch you then. CliffCentral.com